Some of you look so serious. This is not a serious sex time. It's a little fun. Feel happy. Happiness is your real nature. You might as well get used to it. It's going to overtake you whether you like it or not. I want you to ask yourself a question. Why am I here? That's that saying. Why did I come here? Did you come to observe the speaker? To compare him to other speakers? Most of you have gone to so many meetings, you're totally confused. Going to meetings with some of you is like going to the movies. You ask, what's playing this week? The same way you ask, who's speaking this week? But some of you never do anything about it. You listen to the message and you go home and you say, well, wasn't he or she an eloquent speaker? That was great. What are we going to do now? Let's go bowling. Let's go watch TV. And you forget all about the meeting until the next time. Some of you have been going to meetings for 30 years or more. What have you accomplished? You have read every book that has been written. Where are you? Are you happy? Are you liberated? Are you free? Ask yourself. What we offer here is absolutely nothing. No thing. It's all in the invisible. It all has to do with consciousness. And consciousness is your real nature. It's really what you are. When you identify with consciousness, you become your real self. When you don't, you're part of humanity, struggling, trying to become free. In order to understand the body-mind phenomena, that you are not the body-mind, you first have to understand what the mind is. What is the mind? It is merely a conglomeration of energy, of thoughts. Thoughts about the past and the future. That's all the mind is. The mind is not your friend. But you can use the mind to accomplish many things. We've all been programmed, brainwashed. It started when you were in your mother's womb. All of her feelings, all of her negation or positiveness, all of her energy was transferred into you. Not only that, but you have some scars past life tendencies, fears, prejudices. Those also go into your subconscious before you're born. When you come out into the world, you're put in your crib and you pick up the vibrations of your house. People fighting, parents hitting each other, loving each other. All that goes into your subconscious mind and makes up you. When you're at the age when you walk, you go outside and play with some friends, and your environment soaks into your subconscious mind. Then you go to school. You go to church, temple, synagogue. And all those teachings go into your subconscious. Then you grow up, you get a job, you have a family, and here you are. You're a product of preconceived ideas, of concepts. But is that really you? It's you as long as you believe it's you. When you get tired of playing games, something within you gives you a push. That's called the inner guru. It pushes you from within. And something outside leads you to the right person, to the right book, to the right environment that you have to be because you have given up playing games. In other words, you've become tired of the world and you want liberation. Wanting liberation is very funny to me. It's like a person taking a shower saying, I want to get wet. Liberation is your very nature. You have to wake up to it, to realize it's you. So you are a conglomeration of thoughts, of energy, that has programmed you since you were a baby. And here you are. So now that you're here, and you know you've been programmed, what are you going to do about it? But let's talk a little bit about the mind, a little more. If you know about the mind, you will know what you have to get rid of. The mind doesn't really exist, but you've been programmed to believe the mind is an entity, that it does exist. Therefore, you have to play this game, getting rid of the mind. Let's see again how the mind works. Let us compare the mind to the earth. A farmer has two seeds. One is of nightshade, which is a deadly poison, and the other is of corn. The seeds are thoughts. The farmer plants both seeds. And once the seeds are planted, the earth has no alternative but to grow in abundance whatever has been planted. In the same way, when you accept certain thoughts, your mind grows those thoughts until they become your experience. And this is why you have the problems that you've got today. You have created them yourself. Take another example. Have you ever planted seeds? Sure you have. Some of you have. Say if a farmer plants a rose seed, a tulip seed, a carrot seed. And let us imagine that these seeds are like us. They can think and talk like humans. And the rose seed says to itself, look at that beautiful rose. They say that I will grow into that rose. I will become a rose. But that sounds impossible. How can I ever be a beautiful rose like that? It's virtually impossible for me to do that. By that very thought, the seed would stagnate and not grow. The carrot seed says the same thing. I'm just a nothing, a nobody. How can I ever grow into a beautiful carrot? By the very thought, the seed would stagnate. In the same way I say to you, you are absolute reality. You are Brahman. Infinite awareness. Consciousness. But you say, how can that be? That sounds impossible. I'm just a lowly person. I'm nobody important. And you keep identifying with your body and your mind. As long as you identify with your body and your mind, the Lord of Karma, Ishvara, becomes your master. And you're under the jurisdiction of the Lord of Karma. Therefore, you keep coming back again and again to this earth. And you become sort of earthbound. Until you become totally free. But you have to do this by yourself. You have to practice certain techniques. Somebody asked me just recently, you say that consciousness, reality, is like a screen, and the body, the world, are all images on the screen. And the question is, since I believe I'm an image, can I change my image to a better one? In other words, as long as you believe that you are an image and you are not consciousness, can you improve your lot? Can you improve your lifestyle and change your image? Now, that is up to the Lord of Karma. As most of you know, everything has been preordained, determined before you took up your body. But you have certain freedom, depending on your karma. And the question really is, can I make a sick body well? Can I make a poor person rich? Can I make a depressed person happy? You're working at a mind level when you do this. you're not going to the ultimate truth, but you're working from your mind. And you can never find freedom and liberation by working from your mind. As an example, let's say, for instance, you manipulate your mind enough and you've got cancer. You've been working on yourself for 15 years. You use imaging techniques. You use mind control. You imagine that the white blood corpuscles are attacking the cancer. And you finally heal yourself of cancer. You get written up in the National Enquirer. You appear on Phil Donahue. And you feel great and proud of yourself. You healed yourself of cancer. Next month you're crossing the street. A truck hits you and you're dead. That's what happens for mind manipulation. Let's take another case. You're working on yourself to become rich. You take the proper real estate courses. You learn business administration. You use mind control. And after 20 years, you become a multimillionaire. You get married, you have 3 children. Then your wife and children get killed in an automobile accident. Somebody kidnaps you and holds you for ransom. And you have to pay out $10 million. And you're back where you started from. What I'm trying to say is working with the mind is not the answer. We bypass the mind. We realize the mind is not our friend. The idea is to annihilate the mind. To annihilate thought. How do we do this? Through the method of Yanamarga. Through the method of Vichara. Self-inquiry. This is the fastest method to liberate you from confusion and ignorance. When you have a problem, when you have some sort of confusion, you simply ask yourself the question, to whom does this come? Who has this problem? Or who has this karma? And pretty soon the answer will come by itself. I do. Then you further ask, from where does this I come from? What is the source of I? You abide in the I, you hold on to the I. You start to use a meditation called I. You simply abide in the I as long as you can. And you follow the I thread into your spiritual heart. You say to yourself, I. remember that everything in the world is attached to I. Isn't it? Think of all the times in your life you said I. I feel sick. I feel depressed. I feel happy. I feel out of sorts. Who is this I that you're talking about? Is it your body? It can't be your body. Because when you sleep and you wake up, you say, I slept. When you dream, you wake up, you say, I dreamt. And when you're awake, you say, I'm awake. To whom are you referring when you say I? Find out. Go within. Ask yourself, who am I? Where did I come from? But never answer. Just pose a question. What is the source of I? And one day you will realize that I does not exist. When you follow I to the source, one day there will be like a big explosion. And you will see myriads of light particles all around you. You will then realize that the whole universe is nothing but a bunch of light particles. Yet this is not the answer. For where do the light particles come from? They come from nothing, from nothing. And nothing is consciousness. Consciousness is like space. It has no shape. Yet it takes the shape of every creation. It appears to take the shape of the world, of people. Everything is consciousness. Consciousness is like a chalkboard. And the objects of the world are like images on the chalkboard. You can draw any image that you like. You can draw an Indian. You can draw two people fighting, two people making love, and then you erase it and draw something else. But the chalkboard never changes. The chalkboard is always the same. So it is with you. You go through all kinds of experiences. But the realization is that you are not the experiences you're going through. You are consciousness. That is your real nature. Think about that. My real nature to you. I am not a preacher. Nor a philosopher. I am not a minister or a lecturer. I can only share with you the way that I feel. When I use the word I am referring to all of you. I am is another word for God, the first name of God. Another word for consciousness, omnipresence, is I am. I feel that I am not the body, Northern Minds. I am absolute awareness. I am ultimate oneness. I am infinite intelligence. Nirvana. Emptiness. I am that I am. I am Satchitananda. I am Parabrahman. I was never born, and I can never die. I am that I am. The world is a product of my imagination. I see the world as consciousness. I see the reality, perfection, peace, love, happiness. This is the real self, and nothing else exists. Welcome to Satsang. Satsang is where we sit around and rejoice in each other. And if there are any questions you wish to ask, feel free to do so. If you wish to make a statement or say anything you like, this is the time to do it. For you don't expect me to keep talking, do you? Feel free to ask any question about the spiritual path or about anything else.
Robert, I know that when we try to meditate or just, you know, clear our minds, you said that we could do it by asking the I question. Someone also mentioned before about clearing the mind by just trying to listen. Is that also another way? Or
it makes no difference what method you use to clear your mind. The idea is to make your mind quiescent, to make your mind still and calm. When your mind is still and calm, you solve the problem. All the methods, self-inquiry, breath control, yoga, everything is to quiet the mind. Use whatever method suits you. You can become the witness to your thoughts. You can watch your thoughts as they go by. When you become the witness and you do not interfere in the thought process, the thoughts will automatically begin to weaken by themselves until they dissipate entirely. You can ask yourself, to whom comes these thoughts? Whatever method you use is fine, but by all means do something to still the mind. And again, when the mind is still and quiet, everything will take care of itself. The secret is to quiet the mind. Your real nature is self-realization. When the mind is stilled, you just return to your real nature, to what you always were.
Earlier you said that something was the fastest path to self-realization.
Mm.
That versus what?
Versus anything. It has been proven that vichara is the fastest path to awaken. Vichara means self-inquiry. By inquiring within yourself and finding the source of your existence, your body mind disappears and you become yourself once again. But it's not for everyone. Most people seem to have some kind of difficulty. Then you've got to do what you've got to do. And do whatever helps you. Breath control. Mantras. Japa. Repetition of God's name. Everything brings you to the top. But by all means, do something. This is why I share these various methods of meditation with you. If you get tired of one, you can use another one. If you practice, something will give eventually. Something will happen to the one who practices.
Robert, ultimately, is there a need for meditation?
No. We meditate just to find out that we don't have to. But if some of us do not meditate, we go crazy. The world has a hold on us. Therefore, meditation is good again to quiet the mind. But as I always say, does God have to meditate? On whom should God meditate on? Himself? When you understand who you are, there will be no need for meditation. Until then, do whatever you have to do.
Now, when we say meditation, from the point of view of Yanamarga, is what we're referring to just abiding in our own awareness?
Exactly. Abiding in the self, in the I. When you abide in the I, you automatically go to the ultimate truth. And you discover that you are consciousness. And you become liberated. By all means, abide in the I. Always.
So when we say meditation, we don't mean something that will take us away from that.
Of course not. As I said before, I is meditation. When you repeat to yourself, I, and do it with your breathing, you inhale, you say I, you exhale, you say I. The reason it's so powerful is because I is the first name of God. You're therefore speaking of yourself. And as you continue with I, ultimate reality will come to you.
But not just plain repetition on the level of the mind, but rather I as I am that I am.
Plain repetition is better than nothing. It's better than thinking of the world. Plain repetition will eventually lead to realization. It will lead to real I. Most people think about their bodies, their affairs, and the world. When you start using I, you forget about the world for a while. And you will notice how better you feel when you're finished, how more secure you feel, how happy you've become. And that proves to you it has some substance. The more you continue it, the greater will ensue the feeling of happiness within yourself.
Robert, what role does grace play in self-inquiry?
Grace is always available. Just like the sun is always available. But sometimes the clouds seem to block the sun. And you no longer get its rays. But it's always there. When the clouds dissipate, the sun shines once more. In the same way, the clouds of doubt, suspicion, apprehension, laziness keep the sun from shining or keep the grace from coming. But the grace is always there. You just have to recognize it, realize it's there, and take part in it. There's no one to give grace. Grace is consciousness. It's the same thing. It's always there. It never went away.
Then why is it said that the Guru bestows grace in three different ways? This I read in the teachings of Maharshi.
Mm.
That it can be by look or thought or touch. What is this bestowing of grace, and is that somehow different from the grace you're talking about?
It's the same thing. This is for the benefit of Ayani, of those who are in ignorance. It is said that the Guru bestows grace by touch, by look, by feel. And that does happen for the person who is taking part in that kind of grace, actually feels it when it happens. But it's always available for the mature student. It's always there. You just have to awaken to it. But they're both the same. There's no difference.
How do you know when you're awakened to it?
Oh, you'll know. You will feel a feeling of immortality. You will feel a peace that you never dream existed. You will feel a bliss that's unworldly. It cannot be described, but you will feel it yourself.
Then what is grace?
Grace is love. Grace is realization. Grace is awakening. Grace is consciousness.
That's all there is, isn't it?
Yes. Nothing else exists.
Is it really necessary for this realm?
For some people, yes. For some people, no. It depends on your karma. You have an inner guru. And if you trust the inner guru will lead you where you have to go. May lead you to another guru, or to a tree, or to a river, or to a book, or to yourself. But you have to surrender to your inner guru for this to happen. When there's total surrender, you will find you're at the right place, doing the right thing.
What part does choice play in this?
There is no choice. The only freedom you have is not reacting to conditions. The only freedom that exists is to turn within and transcend the whole ball of wax. Transcend karma, the world, and God. And become totally free. So in a way you can say you have a choice. A choice whether you're going to turn within and not react to circumstances, or you're going to react to circumstances and play the game all over again. That choice is yours. Everything else has been determined prior to you taking birth. Now, that's a tough statement to make to a Westerner who has a big ego. But I can assure you it's the truth. It is only when you're not realized, as it appears, that you get involved in the karma trip.
Is there any indication of when it's coming there, realization, Robert?
Sometimes there is and sometimes there's not. Usually it's like turning out into light. You've been in a room full of darkness for years, and you turn on the light. The only indication is...
Everyone got into that state in this lifetime. It would not be so bad to come back and see what kind of a world the people who are realized can make.
Everyone will never get into that state. It's the way of this world. This planet is like a third great planet, planet of duality. The idea is to get off the planet and not come back. Let God take care of the world. Find yourself and become free. And then see if you ask the question. We always get concerned about the world. But remember, you are the world. The world comes from your mind, from your thoughts. You are the creator of the world by your very thoughts that you feel. When your thoughts go out, the world is created. When you pull your thoughts in, the world disappears.
So if theoretically we all became realized, there would be no world to come back to.
Exactly. Because the world never existed to begin with. The world is like an optical illusion, like a dream. It exists because you exist. But what happens to the world when you're in deep sleep? It no longer exists, but you exist. Find out who you are.
There really is no question, is there?
No, there's not. But as long as you feel that you are not yourself, then there will always be a question. For if you are the self, to whom will you ask a question? For the self is omnipresence.
It seems sad to leave this world.
It seems sad to leave this world?
No, to leave this world in such an awful state without trying to make it a little better.
What have you got to do with the world? The world has always been there and will always be here. Set yourself free and then see if you're concerned with the world. Now what I mean by that is this. The world does not exist as it appears. As long as you believe in the world, you're going to ask the question you just asked. Because you think the world is an appearance of reality. But it does not exist. Let's say, for instance, as an example, you have a dream. And in that dream, the world is a terrible mess. People are killing each other. There are earthquakes, cataclysms. Man's humanity is a man. It's just terrible. Then you wake up. What happened to the world? You forget about it, don't you? You forget about your dream. And you concentrate in this world. In the same way, when you wake up from reality, this world disappears in the same way the dream did. And only you exist as the self or as consciousness.
And from there, whatever happens, happens.
There's nothing to happen. To whom shall it happen?
Yeah. Well, from an Ajnani's view, whatever happens, happens with that person and how they affect other people.
Well, to an Ajnani, all kinds of things are always happening. But to a Ajnani, nothing is happening.
But it's interesting because I can view you and see how you're affecting hundreds of people, benefiting hundreds of people. And yet to you, this world doesn't exist per se. Yet, from my viewpoint, as an Ajnani, I can see what benefit you're making by attaining realization.
Well, instead of seeing what I'm doing, why don't you see what you're doing?
I'm not doing
it. Find out who you are.
Right.
Never mind me.
Right, my own motivation. But I'm sort of hoping to shed some light on your question.
Well, maybe we're just here because we really want to be taught something larger than what we are experiencing. We wouldn't be here if we wanted to be more into the world than we want to take. Take a physical stand. Maybe we tried it and realized that it's impossible to change the world.
People have been trying to bring peace to this world from time immemorial. Remember, our civilization is not the first one on this planet. This planet is billions of years old, and we've had civilizations more advanced than we are today, and they've all been wiped out. Consequently, don't worry about the world. Find out who you are, and let the world take care of itself.
Seems like the world is like an obstacle path for the soul to be realized. If you don't pass, then you come back again. Something like that.
That's a nice way to put it. It seems like that. But in reality, there are no obstacle paths. For whom is the obstacle path? Ask yourself. If you ask yourself that question, and you follow the answer within yourself, you will realize there never was an obstacle path, that you've always been free.
But in order for us to be free, we need to, it seems like we need to learn certain lessons. So we keep coming back to achieve that, to be free.
It seems that way. But the only lesson you need to learn is that you are not the body-mind phenomenon. That's all. Everything else will take care of itself.
That's why we keep coming back. It's too simple.
That's right. We become attached to worldly things. And the world pulls us back over and over again. It's part of the dream, which is called Maya. It appears very strong for most people. That's why most people can never get in a path like this, because it's too much for them.
the natural world, the world that was here before people. It seems to me that's part of a universal existence. Just the trees and air and water.
When you go to sleep, what happens to the trees and the air and the water? They no longer exist for you. They only exist when you wake up, because they're created by your mind. So ask yourself, to whom is the trees and the wood and the air for? And you'll realize it exists because of your ego. When your ego is disintegrated, everything else goes with it and you become free. See, everything that exists in the world, so to speak, must perish. The trees last for so long. The mountains last for so long. People last for so long. Everything has to perish. Everything that is born must die. So find out for yourself, who is it that was born and who has to die? Ask yourself. Inquire within yourself. And see what happens. For whom is there birth and death? Find out. Now, when most of you leave here, you're going to forget what I said in about 10 minutes. You're going to say, now what should I do now? I think I'll go to a restaurant and eat, or I'll go to a movie. I'll worry about my future. I'll get ready for work tomorrow. It is only one in a thousand that thinks about these things all the time and does something about it. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, out of 1,000, one searches for God. And out of 1,000 that search, one finds him. Find out where you stand as far as that's concerned. Where do you fit in? Do you still have fears, frustrations, doubts, suspicions? Are you still worried about your job, or worried about the world, or worried about your body or your life? This makes you earthbound. It keeps you from becoming liberated. To become liberated, you've got to forget about your little self, about me, 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 me all the time, and realize that you are the self of the universe. Realize that everything, the whole universe, is the self, and I am that. All is well.
Is the universe, within the universe, is there contained other stars and planets? Is that part of the universe?
Yes.
That we're part of?
Everything is part of the dream.
That's part of the dream.
The planets, the stars, the universe, everything. Even God. It's all part of your dream. When you wake up, there's no separation between you and reality. You become all-pervading. Ultimate oneness. Pure consciousness. And there's no room for anything else. Because you are all there is. As the self. So the good news is you can become a Jiva Mukta, liberated while in the body in this life. But you've got to make it happen. It's up to you. What I mean is, you've got to realize if you're not the body or the mind, that's making it happen. It always begins in the morning. As soon as you wake up and open your eyes, what is the first thing you think about? Try to catch yourself. When your mind starts to wander and you start to think about your work or your dishes or your breakfast or whatever, as soon as you open your eyes, realize, I exist. I exist. Not as a body or a mind, but I exist as consciousness. And then ask yourself, then for whom is the body mind? And the answer will be, it's for me. I feel it. Hold on to the me. Follow the me to its origin, to its source. And you will find that me never existed. That's a beautiful way to start off the morning. But catch yourself. That's how it begins. When your mind starts thinking, catch yourself. Keep your mind from thinking. Go back to the self. Go back to self-inquiry. It will become easier and easier as you do it. Every week we have a reading from one of the great spiritual traditional books. And Narada picked out something today that confirms what we've been talking about. So feel free to do it, Narada. If you want to make some announcements first, go ahead.
The man who is pure at heart is bound to fulfill himself in whatever way he is taught. The worldly man takes all his life, but is still bewildered. Detached from the senses, you are free. Attached, you are bound. When this is understood, you may live as you please. When this is understood, the man who is bright and busy and full of fine words falls silent. He does nothing. He is still. No wonder those who wish to enjoy the world shun this understanding. You are not the body. Your body is not you. You are not the doer. You are not the enjoyer. You are pure awareness, the witness of all things. You are without expectation, free. Wherever you go, be happy. Desire and aversion are of the mind. The mind is never yours. You are free of its turmoil. You are awareness itself, never changing. Wherever you go, be happy. For see, the self is in all beings, and all beings are in the self. Know you are free. free of I, free of mind. Be happy. In you the world arise like waves in the sea. It is true. You are awareness itself. So free yourself from the fever of the world. Have faith, my child. Have faith. Do not be bewildered, for you are beyond all things, the heart of all knowing. You are the self. You are God. The body is confined by its natural properties. It comes, it lingers a while, it goes. But the self neither comes nor goes. So why grieve for the body? If the body lasted till the end of time or vanished today, what would you win or lose? You are pure awareness. You are the endless sea in whom all the worlds, like waves, naturally rise and fall. You have nothing to win, nothing to lose. Child, you are pure awareness, nothing less. You and the world are one. So who are you to think you can't hold on to it or let it go? How could you? You are the clear space of awareness, pure and still, in whom there is no birth, no activity, no I. You are the one and the same. You cannot change or die. You are in whatever you see, you alone. Just as bracelets and bangles and dancing anklets are all of the same gold. I am not this, I am he. Give up such distinctions. Know that everything is the self. Rid yourself of all purpose and be happy. The world only arises from ignorance. You alone are real. There is no one, not even God, separate from yourself. You are pure awareness. The world is an illusion, nothing more. When you understand this fully, desire falls away. You find peace. For indeed, there is nothing. In the ocean of being, there is only one. There was and there will be only one. You are already fulfilled. How can you be bound or free? Wherever you go, be happy. Never upset your mind with yes and no. Be quiet. You are awareness itself. Live in the happiness of your own awareness, which is happiness itself. What is the use of thinking? Once and for all, give up meditation. Hold nothing in your mind. You are the self, and you are free.
Come on.
The beginning here.
Yes.
When the virtuous people die, they move towards and live in heaven. The period of their sojourn in heaven may extend from 80 to 240 years, it is popularly believed. They are, after the termination of their period of stay in heaven, again reborn on earth. After death, the virtuous people enjoy the pleasures of heaven as a reward of their merits, their virtuous deeds, their services, and their sacrifices. When their merits are exhausted, they return to earth. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita,
just read the translation.
They having enjoyed.
What a word.
Yes. They, having enjoyed the spacious heaven world, their holiness withered, come back to this world of death. Following the virtues enjoined by the scriptures, desiring desires, they obtain the transitory. But when a virtuous person comes back from heaven to the physical world, he takes birth in noble and virtuous families. This is the advantage of virtuous deeds. There is a double retribution or reward for man's virtuous actions. He gets, after his sojourn in heaven and return to earth, a good birth with good surroundings, environments, and opportunities for his good actions and inner evolution. And so we have justified caste.
Yes.
And all.
As far as that goes.
If a caste is maintained purely, then it's really karmic. But now, nowadays, the caste is so mingled and all that, it doesn't hold true anymore, per se.
That's true.
Caste system.
Well, which contradicts this in a sense, though, doesn't that?
That was written a long time ago.
I wrote this in 1962. Reality has nothing to do with this. But this is the appearance. That's how it looks.
Well, the caste system still operates.
You're
born a poor Indian, you can't.
Yes.
There's nothing you can do about it.
It doesn't
work. If you're born a poor American, you're homeless.
Right, but
it doesn't work with karma anymore. If a caste system is intact, like it was a long time back then, it works with karma.
Things have changed with the caste system.
Yeah.
But karmically, nothing ever changes. Good.
Retrogression into animal births. Hindu scriptures say that a man may become a deva, or a beast, or a bird, or vegetable, or stone, according to his merit or demerit. The Upanishads also corroborate this statement. Kapila also agrees on this point. But Buddhism and some Western philosophers teach there is no more retrogression for a man when once he takes human birth. There is no necessity for him to be born as an animal, for the sake of demerit. He can be punished in a variety of ways in the human birth itself. When a man takes the form of a deva, all human samskaras, habits, and tendencies will remain dormant. When a man takes the form of a dog, the animal tendencies, habits, and samskaras only will manifest. Human tendencies will remain suppressed. Some dogs get royal treatment in the palaces of kings and aristocratic people. They move in cars, eat good food, and sleep in cushions. These are all degenerated human beings.
Sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Good life, huh?
Degenerate. Is that why they're man's best friend?
Do you want to read Mary?
Oh, no, I just said I would like to have a copy of those.
Are there any more copies?
Here.
Give that to him. Anybody like to continue reading? Okay, good.
At the bottom, I think, of the bottom of the back, the first column on the first page. Yeah, start at the top of the second column.
Oh, occasionally. Philosophy of death. Occasionally, in moments of calm contemplation, when we are thrown in an introspective mood, we sometimes wonder why God, who is such a kind, compassionate, and merciful Father, should have included death in the scheme of life. The fact is, death comes as a necessity to egg us on in our evolution. Could you just imagine of a world where there would be no death? Overpopulation even today poses as a difficult problem with all the deaths that are taking place in normal course. So imagine the extent of chaos and confusion that would result if there would be no death. Life would no longer be worth living. It would become a dull, drab drudgery. Living in the same body, We cannot grow beyond our bonds and ties of attachments. Complete separation is necessary to make us cautious of our attachments. During our brief sojourn in this world, we get so much attached to this terra firma that when death knocks at our door, we feel too reluctant to be torn from our family surroundings and leave our material possessions so painstakingly created. Therefore, to completely snap the tie of attachment, death is the only solution. Death is not only a necessity for those who die, but it is also necessary for the evolution of those who are left behind. Death helps devolve responsibilities on new shoulders. They accept the challenge of life and grow in experience. Father suddenly passes away. Son takes up the new responsibility, bears it, and enriches his treasure house of experience. And when a child dies in his infancy, it may not be much of an assimilation of experience for him, except for certain karmic purgation. But it means all the more for those who are left behind. We have to grow beyond attachment, ego, and desire to enjoy immunity from sufferings. Thus, by helping us transcend our world attachments, death plays an indispensable role. In fact, individual soul could never grow without death. The evolutionary process is a long one. It requires various types of experiences of poverty and riches, of purity and pollution, of ignorance and education, of every country, clime, culture, race, and religion. It requires experiences of both the sexes as well. In a single body, all this is not possible to assimilate. Therefore, by virtue of necessity, we die and are born again under different circumstances for a different set of experiences.
You were a good reader, Mary. Would you like to read more?
Oh, I've done for 15 years, mm-hmm. I think. Mark? Thank you, Robert. Assimilation of experience is also not possible without death. In the post-mortem state, the consciousness widens. The deeds of the past lifetime have a reaction, and we learn many new lessons. We often notice monkeys devouring eatables rapidly and then masticating them at leisure. Similarly, we masticate our experiences in a higher and wider light, which shines after death. During our stay in the astral plane, the scenes of our past life flit past our eyes, one after another. We begin to relive our lives with the difference that now we are identified with all the actors in every situation. We feel as we did when we tortured someone, as also like the one who was tortured by us. We experience the pain of the latter. This process exhausts our karma to a degree and provides us a usable lesson. Karmic purgation occurs when both the oppressor and also the oppressed have been able to excuse each other. Retaliation only augments karmic bondage. Death comes as a necessary drop scene between two births. It is a drop scene inasmuch as the activities go on behind the curtain. Thus, after the assimilation of one set of experiences of one life, the individual soul is provided again with a new set of mental, emotional, and pranic body, eminently suited for his next reincarnation. In this manner, from life to life, he travels, assimilating his diverse experiences. In normal course, the period that intervenes between two births is about 400 to 500 years in occult parlance, or 1 year is equal to 1 day of Pitris.